personal service of Krishna.
No, from this particular verse, Ramananda Rai and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begin another discussion, a series of questions, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be asking Ramananda Rai about what is the best type of education, what is the highest wealth. So there's a series of beautiful questions and answers with purport by Srila Prabhupada, in which he quotes relevant verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and other places. So Mahaprabhu is asking that, of all education, what is the most important education? Of all types of education. Ramananda Rai replies that the transcendental devotional service to Krishna is the highest of all types of education. So here, Prabhupada writes here that the mundane education, the materialistic education, which simply aims at material sense gratification, is actually, in one sense, is a very low type of education. They're only talking about only matter. And higher than the mundane education is the knowledge of the impersonal Brahman or Brahma Vidya. But higher than that is the transcendental knowledge, the knowledge about the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. So this is the gradations of education. Mundane education, knowledge of impersonal Brahman, and higher than that is devotional service. Education about devotional service. So there are two quotations are given by Srila Prabhupada. One from the Narada Muni's instructions to Prachina Barihishad, 29th chapter of the 4th canto. Tat karma haritosham yat savidya tan materyaya. Work meant for pleasing the Supreme Lord is the best, and education that enhances one's Krishna consciousness is the best. If you remember that Narada Muni, when he is in the last section of this, he is preaching to conversation with Prachina Barishad. Prachina Barishad, at that point he explains that I have had many teachers in the past, but none of my previous teachers have ever explained what you actually spoken to me. And then he expresses his gratitude, and Narada Muni, in those verses, Prabhupada, if you see those verses, Narada Muni talks about the best type of education is actually devotional service. So one such verse is quoted by Srila Prabhupada from that section. And the second verse which is quoted by Prabhupada is Prahlad Maharaj's words to Hiranyakashipu: Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam Vishnu Pada Sevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. Especially the next verse is relevant to this discussion. Iti Pumsarpita Vishnu Bhaktis Chain Navalakshana Kriyeta Bhagavat Yadda Tanmanye Ditamuttamam. One who is educated in this 9 process of devotional service is considered to be the topmost learned person. He is the greatest pandit. So these two verses are quoted. Next question. Kirti Gana Madhye Jivera Kona Bada Kirti Krishna Bhakta Baliyaya Yaharahaya Kyati.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then asked Ramananda Rai, out of all glorious activities, which is the most glorious? Ramananda Rai replied, that person who is reputed to be a devotee of Lord Krishna enjoys the utmost fame and glory.
So again, a similar answer. Who is the most glorious? A person who is a devotee of Krishna is the most glorious, the famous person. Again, a series of quotes are given by Srila Prabhupada for this. So Prabhupada explains that people generally consider that one who is wealthy and rich, such a person is actually a famous person or a glorious person. So there is usually intense competition to achieve a particular position, to become wealthy. in order to achieve fame. But this kind of fame is actually temporary. And sometimes a person higher than that is that a person may want to become famous as a great jnani, as a Brahma jnani. One may want to become a great scholar and maybe more inclined towards impersonalism. But from that way also a person may want to become famous. Or sometimes we see that people want to become famous by actually getting some mystic siddhis. But he says that in either case, such reputations are inferior to the reputation of Krishna's devotee. So here also three gradations are given. A materialist wanting to become famous by wealth or etc. And a Brahmajnani who is wanting to become famous. And higher than that is a devotee. So there are different quotations are given. The first quotation is from the Garuda Puran. Kalau Bhagavatam Nama Durlabham Naiva Labhyate Brahma Rudra Padot Krishtam Guruna Katitam Mama. The fame of a person who is known as a devotee is very rare, especially in the age of Kali. And such a fame is actually superior even to the demigods like Brahma and Shiva. And this is the Guruna Katitam Mama. This is the opinion of all the spiritual masters. So in Kali Yuga, especially, and such a person, a devotee is very rare and is more famous than Brahma and Shiva, and it is the opinion of the great scholars. And then from the Itihasa Samuchaya, Janmantara Sahasreshu, Yasya Syad Buddhi Ridrishi, Dasoham Vasudevasya Sarval Lokan Samuddaret. So when a person who realizes that he is an eternal servant of Krishna can deliver all the worlds. I was just remembering, if somebody knows the exact words, you know, but in the Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam, in that same verse, Prabhupada has written a very long purport, devoting 1-2 pages for each of those 9 processes. And when he describes the Dasyam, I think he mentions one particular sentence that I think it appears similar to this verse. He says that if a person simply knows or realizes that he is actually an eternal servant of Krishna, then that is equivalent to performing all the process of devotional service. Something to that effect. And then he mentions another point that simply by realizing that one is an eternal servant of Krishna, one can actually deliver, simply by that actually one can actually influence people, one can deliver others. I think Prabhupada has taken that word from this verse, it looks like. So, and then the third quotation is from Adi Puran, where Krishna is telling to Arjuna, the most exalted position of liberation is given by the Vedic knowledge. Everyone follows in the footsteps of the devotee. The fourth quotation from Brahma Naradiya Puran. It is explained that till now even the demigods like Brahma and Shiva did not know the influence of a devotee. The fourth quotation is very interesting. It is from Garuda Puran. This verse is also comes in that when Advaita Acharya offers the Shraddha Patra to Haridas Thakur. So in that section in the Chaitanya Bhagavat also the same verse is quoted, I think. Brahmananam Sahasrebhyo Sarva Yaji Vishishyate Satra Yaji Sahasrebhya Sarva Vedanta Paragaha Sarva Vedanta Vitkotya Vishnu Bhakto Vishishyate Vaishnavanam Sahasrebhya Ekant Yeko Vishishyate. This gives a gradation among the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Among thousands of Brahmanas, a Brahmana who is qualified to perform sacrifices is the superior. And among the Brahmanas who is qualified to perform sacrifices, a Brahmana who has actually knows all the Vedic knowledge. one who is actually learned in Vedic knowledge, he is actually considered the superior. And yet, out of thousands of such brahmanas, one who has surpassed the Vedic knowledge, that means a person who is a Vishnu Bhakta, he is the most famous. But even among the Vishnu Bhaktas, among the Vaishnavas, one who is constantly engaged in devotional service, he is the topmost. And then there's a sixth quotation is from third canto. Prabhupada has given a slightly different translation here. This verse is spoken by Vidura to Maitreya Rishi. Shrutasya pumsam suchira shramasya nan vanjesa iribir suribir iditortha tattad gunanu shravanam mukunda padaravinda hridayeshu yesham. So here Prabhupada says, after putting so much of great labor, a person may become a great scholar in Vedic literatures and become famous. But on the other hand, a devotee who is actually engaged in hearing and chanting, such a person is even superior to this person who has put so much of effort to become a Vedic scholar. And then the next quotation from Narayana Vyuhastava. A person is saying that, I don't even aspire to take birth as Brahma if I am not going to be a devotee as Brahma. Instead, I prefer to take birth as an insect if I am given a chance to remain in the house of a devotee. It's a beautiful verse. And then Prabhupada says there are many other quotations and gives references. So after giving these things, all these quotations tell that how a devotee is most famous, devotee is most glorious. And then, among the devotees, who are the topmost? And then he gives the quotation. Lord Shiva says that among all the devotees, Prahlad Maharaj is the greatest. But higher than Prahlad Maharaj, is the more advanced than Prahlad Maharaj are the Pandavas. But even more advanced devotees than the Pandavas are the Yadus. And among the Yadus, the topmost devotees, Uddhav. Uddhav. And even superior to Uddhav are the Rajavasis and especially the Gopis of Vrindavan. So therefore he comes to the conclusion that the Gopis are the topmost devotees of Krishna. And then for that he gives two quotations. One from the Brihad Vamana Puran. Shashti Varsha Sahasrani Maya Taptam Tapapura Nanda Gopar Vajastrinam Pada Renupa Labdaye. So it's explained that Lord Brahma is telling to Bhrigumuni that I underwent austerities for 60,000 years just to get the dust of the lotus feet of the gopis, but still I could not actually. Just to understand the dust of the lotus feet of the gopis, but still I could not understand it. In fact, what to speak of me, even Shiva, Lakshmi Devi, and Lord Sesha, even they were not able to understand the glory of the dust of the lotus feet of the gopis. And the second verse to show the gopis are the topmost devotees, it is from the Adi Puran. This is a verse very similar to the verse from the Uddhava Gita, but there is a difference in the last line. Na tatame priyatamo brahma rudrascha parthiva nacha lakshmir nacha tatmacha yata gopi jano mama. So Krishna says that Lord Brahma, Shiva, goddess of fortune, even my own self are not as dear to me as the gopis. And among the gopis, the topmost gopi, the topmost devotee is Srimati Radharani. So then Prabhupada explains that. So actually Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were the most exalt, they are the most exalted servitors of Srimati Radharani and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore he gives a conclusion that therefore, one who is engaged in the service of Srimati Radharani They are like so great. In this way, he glorifies Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And then he quotes a verse from Chaitanya Chandramrita about Srila Rupa Goswami. Astam vairagya kotir bhavatu shamadama kshanti maitradi kotis tatvanudhyana kotir bhavatu bhavatu va vaishnavi bhakti koti kotyam shopyasya nasya tadapi gunagano yastvata siddha aste Srimad Chaitanya Chandra Priya Charananaka Jyotir Amoda Bajam. The qualities of one engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, such as reputation, austerities, finances and knowledge, are not to be compared to the good qualities of others. Next verse. Sampattira Madhya Jivera Kon Sampatti Gani Radha Krishna Premeyandra Seibadadani.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, of the many capitalists who possesses great riches, who is the topmost? Ramanand Rai replied, he who is the richest in love for Radha and Krishna is the greatest capitalist.
So he gives a clear answer. One who has love for Krishna is the greatest capitalist, or the richest person. And there is a verse quoted from Akrura's prayers. Kim alabhyam bhagavati prasanne shriniketane tatapi tatpara rajan nahi vanchanti kinchana. You can read the translation. Yeah.
What is difficult for devotees of Lord Krishna, who is the shelter of the goddess of fortune? Although such devotees can obtain anything, O King, they do not desire anything.
Next verse. Dukkha madhye kona dukkha haya guru tara Krishna bhakta virahavina dukkha nahi deki para.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, of all kinds of distress, what is the most painful? Sri Ramanand Rai replied, apart from separation from the devotee of Krishna, I know of no unbearable happiness.
So separation from a devotee of Krishna is the greatest distress. There is a verse which is quoted by Srila Prabhupada. The reference is not given, but I have heard this verse at least quite a few times, Gaurang Prabhu quoting this verse. Mam anaradhya dukkartha kutumba sakta manasaha satsanga rahito martyu vriddha seva parichyutaha. This is from 333. Oh, achha, 336. Oh, it's from the Bhagavatam. Okay. Kapiladev Siksha. Okay. So this verse talks about what is the reason for unhappiness. Three points are explained. One who does not worship Krishna, and Kutumba Sakta Manasa, one who is attached to the family life, and Vriddha Seva Parichuta, one who does not associate with the Vaishnavas, or one who does not render service to the superior. And also satsangu. Fourth point is that one who does not actually associate, one who does not have satsanga. So then another verse is from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which says that out of all kinds of desirable things, experience in the life of a living entity, association with the devotees of the Lord is the greatest. And when we are separated from a devotee, even for a moment, we cannot enjoy happiness. Then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked that, out of all the liberated persons, who is the greatest? Again, he says that one who has love for Krishna is the greatest among all the liberated persons. Muktanam api siddhanam, narayana parayana, sudurlava prashantatma, kotishvavi mahamuni. Then Mahaprabhu asks that, like, there are so many songs, out of all these songs, which song is considered to be the actual religion of the living entity? It's not from the Bhagavatam. Veda base, it's not there. Mamana 336. No, okay. Anyway. Yes.
Prabhu, in the Mahaprabhu's pastimes, Mahaprabhu leaving the devotees and going and later on returning back. You know, those scenes are very... the great tragedy, devotees falling on the ground, unconscious, crying, weeping and all. And then Mahaprabhu coming back, Sambhog meeting again with him is a great event. So that type of, the feeling of separation, even amongst the devotees also we find in the Satyam Charitamrita. But in our general life, as a Vaishnava life, you know, we many times are separated from, you know, spiritual master and other Vaishnavas in our life when they go to faraway place and then they return back after long time. So in such kind of instances, although it's likely we may feel a little bit of separation, the strong sense of feeling of separation and dependence on Vaishnavas, I feel... I do not know about others, at least I feel personally I lack it. So I wanted to know how, because it seems from the Vaishnava literature that as much as we are making an effort to attain Krishna's lotus feet, you know, equally or at least, if not equally, at least to a great degree, one has to cultivate the feelings for Vaishnavas, by which one will not... feel very complacent even when one is separated also. So this has been always a mystery for me, because nowadays what has happened, we are living in an age of information explosion. You know, recordings are available, you know, association is abundantly available in the form of Vani and video also. Not only Vani, video Vani we have available. So I feel that this sufficiently dampens the feelings of separation. You can say something on that. Because this verse is talking about the greatest pain is to be separated from devotees.
Yeah, I think it's a very valid point.
Prita, Prabhupada was to come to India, and one disciple asked Prabhupada, in case you are very sickly, you cannot come, can you send one of your god brothers or somebody? And tears were, you know, streaming from the eyes of Prabhupada. You know, how can you think, you know, you can substitute someone else in my place? You know, but how can you have such a relationship with me? Like the Prabhupada felt. One thing in Lilamrita is there is no purport given to this. So different people say different things about this. Prabhupada was very pained that those disciples did not understand his value or whatever, you know. But now, in this age, day and age, we find that, you know, because people have abundant association of speakers from all over the world, you know. So the connectedness to one great Vaishnava and to draw great you know inspiration from him and to feel sheltered in him. Mm. You know, I feel that becomes greatly reduced mm-hmm. because of abundant sound vibration available. Mm-hmm. This was another point.
Yeah, it's a very, very valid point in the sense because of the modern technology, so many times we don't feel the separation from the devotees. So sometimes like devotees are in different places, but they have the particular email group or WhatsApp group where in that. The conversation is going on. So in that, sometimes one may be active, and then when they actually come together, then one does not feel that separation. It definitely, I think, it's a very valid point that technology, it in an unconscious manner, invisibly, it tries to reduce that intensity of feelings. It actually suppresses the feelings of separation from a devotee. So one thing can say is that we will have to, I think, consciously cultivate it. There has to be actually conscious endeavor. When the devotees are, usually the tendency is that when the devotees are actually present, we take it for granted. When the devotees disappear, then at that time we tend to conduct a memorial meeting, we glorify. That is definitely good, but then we tend to actually neglect the devotees when they are actually present. So even Durbhago Bataloko Yam Yadavo Nitaram, that third kind of verse comes, that Yadavas actually considered Krishna, they were feeling that we took Krishna as an ordinary person. So one has to make a conscious endeavor. And another point which you mentioned is that, so because now there are so much of like abundance of Krishna Katha available, so we don't feel the dependence on one single person, as the devotees actually felt at that time, like when someone. Prabhupada's one book will be published, then devotees would actually immediately they would be so eager to read that book. And then in Russia and all, like one book was read by like multiple people because there were hardly any books available. One book would be read by passed by one devotee to another devotee, another devotee, another devotee, would be read by multiple people. But now we have an abundance of, like all the books are there and actually it's in a simple mobile phone, but the desire is actually lacking. I mean, so many, we have association with so many devotees, but that quality of that feeling of separation from the devotee is lacking. So we have to, my just feeling is that like we have to, put a more conscious effort to we can make it a practice of appreciating certain devotees, we can try to like sometimes contemplate about the qualities and association, importance of certain association of devotees, how it actually helped us, can try to meditate upon certain good qualities of the devotees, and by that I think we can develop more appreciation. Anybody else has any other points or anybody? Or you have anything else you have in mind? But from
One thing became very clear to me, that all of us are connected to somebody, you know, to whom we are accountable.
Hmm.
You know, and that person will have certain expectations from us. And through his sound vibration, he is trying to mold us in that direction, so that we will be able to please Krishna through him, and because we are connected to him. So for example, Jiva Goswami had 3 Shiksha disciples, you know, although they had different gurus, you know, but they were trained, molded in a certain way, and then they came up like that. In the same manner, many times the disciple is attached to the guru's name also, along he is a disciple of so and so, like that in the Vedic times. So which actually means that he was trying to please that person, you know, under whom he is working. So if one has to please someone right above them, you know, one has to know his desires, yeah. And if one is careless about it, in the name of Krishna Katha, one may get a lot of inspiration from all over the world. And if one doesn't know exactly what he wants me to do, then one may be displeasing him. You know? So I felt that even in the absence of a person, or because most 90% disciples don't get his personal audience or one-to-one interaction also. So for them, it's all the more important that they know his desires through his lectures and instructions which come. And I feel that if one aligns with it as the core principle in spiritual life, like I can confidently say, I hear from many people, but I will only do what my spiritual master says, finally. You know. And I, whenever I do anything new, I consult him always. But many disciples don't have that facility. You know. So when we make something pivotal, then around the pivotal thing, we can align many other things around it in order to ultimately help us to surrender to our own guru more nicely, if it helps. To. Also, another thing I feel is, guru orders us to do something, and we have our desires also. For example, I want to hear some lecture where I take a Sanskrit verse and split it into parts, you know, anvaya and all I do and read, and I may not hear from my guru like that, but I may want to hear. So that is my desire. But my desire should be subordinate to guru's order. You know? As long as that is so, I don't see any problem in multiple inspiration. Yeah. Yes.
I will go to the next verse. So then, the next is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks, among many songs, which song is considered to be the actual religion of the living entity? And Ramananda Rai says that the song which describes the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna is superior to all other songs. So here Prabhupada has given a very profound purport. So he quotes this verse from the Rasa Panchadhyaya, Anugrahaya Bhaktanam, Manusham Deham Astita, Bhajate Tadrishi Krida, Yashrutva Tatparu Bhavet. So then he says that in regards to, although Mahaprabhu is saying that, Ramanandra is saying that hearing the song about Radha and Krishna is the topmost, is the superior to all other songs, but Prabhupada is giving a caution in the purport. He says that non-devotees are strictly prohibited to hear Rasleela, and it is very dangerous for them to hear Rasleela. So then he explains that especially Rasleela is described, pastimes of Radha and Krishna are described in the books of Jayadeva Goswami, Chanditas and Vidyapati, etc. So he is explaining they are strictly prohibited and it is dangerous for them if they hear. And then he explains that actually the qualification for hearing the songs about Radha and Krishna is that one must be a pure devotee of Krishna. And if one, and then he also explains that one should not actually imitate, one may hear, but one should not imitate Radha Krishna Leela. So finally, it's explained that the talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, it is meant for the most advanced devotees only. But those who are on the mundane platform and who study these talks in order to put forward some thesis for a PhD, they will not be able to understand them. So, very profound statement. Instead, it will have a poisonous effect, just like when somebody tries to imitate Lord Shiva by drinking poison, it will have a poisonous effect. Then Mahaprabhu asks that out of all auspicious beneficial activity, which is the best for the living entity? Ramananda Rai says that the only auspicious activity is association with the devotees of Krishna. Ata atyantikam kshemam prichyamo bhavato naga samsaresmin kshanardopi satsanga shevadi nirnam. Can you read the translation of this?
We are asking you to tell us what is the most perfect welfare activity. I think that is that in this material world, association with devotees, even if it is be for a moment, is the greatest treasure house for mankind.
So then Mahaprabhu asks that actually what should the living entities remember at every moment? So he explains naturally that one should remember Krishna at every moment, Krishna's name, qualities and pastimes. Tasmat sarvatmana rajan hari sarvatra sarvada shrotavya kirtitavyascha smartavyo bhagavan rinam. Then he asks that which is the best types of meditation which is required for the living entities. Ramananda Rai says that meditating upon the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna is the best type, the chief duty of a living entity. 254th verse. Sarvatyaji jivera kartavya kahavasa Vraja Bhumi Vrindavana Yaha Lila Rasa.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, where should the living entity live, abandoning all other places? Ramanand Rai replied, he should live in a holy place known as Vrindavana or Vraja Bhumi, where the Lord performed his Rasa dance.
So here the quotation is given how Uddhava desired to take birth as a Gulma Lata in the outskirts of Vrindavan. In this way, he actually glorified Vrajabhumi. And the next question is that, out of all the topics, which is actually best for the living entities? So hearing about the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna is the most pleasing to the ear. So here also, there is a... I think it's slightly different, because in the 252nd verse, he already asked the question, what should a living entity remember at every moment? So smaranam and meditation, dhyanam, there's a slight difference. In the 64 items of sadhana bhakti also, you'll see one item is smaranam, another item is actually dhyanam, meditation. So there is a difference is given. Rupa Goswami, if you remember, the difference between smaranam and meditation is that he says in meditation there is a conscious effort. That's what he says. In smaranam is general remembrance of Krishna. Meditation is putting a conscious effort to remember. So in that, again, he gives subcategories for meditation, guna dhyanam, leela dhyanam, seva dhyanam, rupa dhyanam. In regards to seva dhyanam, he gives the story of the brahmana Pratishthanpur. And smaranam, he says, you may just check it, but according to my remember, smaranam is general remembrance of Krishna. Meditation involves a conscious effort to meditate on the remember certain aspects of Krishna. That's why this verse from the first canto is quoted, that tasma dekena manasa bhagavan satvatam pati shrotavya kirtitavyascha dyeya pujyascha nityada. Dyeya, the meditation comes. So the topmost subject matter for hearing is again Radha Krishna pastimes. Ichchata bhayam. So here Prabhupada explains, although it is said that the topmost subject matter is to hear about Radha Krishna pastimes, but if an unqualified person hears Radha Krishna pastimes, then while hearing that, he may remember his own life, his own love affair with a girl, Radha, or some other girl, something like that, he says. There's one mundane rogue once said that when the Vaishnavas chant the name Radha Radha, he simply remembers a barber's wife named Radha. This is a practical example. So therefore, unless a person is liberated, one should not actually try to hear about the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna. And so therefore, if a person is not liberated, if he hears the Radha Krishna pastimes, one may just remember his own illicit connection with a woman. So then he explains that in the conditioned stage, one should not even try to remember such things. By practicing the regulative principles, one should rise to the platform of spontaneous attraction for Krishna. So he gives two quotations, when a person becomes liberated, and secondly, when a person has come to the stage of spontaneous attraction for Krishna, that is Raganuga, then a person can hear. Although these affairs may be very pleasing, both to the conditioned souls and the liberated souls. This sentence is most important. But still the conditioned soul should not try to hear them. The talks between Ramananda Raya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are conducted on the platform of liberation. Then he explains that what is the, among all the worshipable objects, which is the best? The chief worshipable object is the holy name of Radha and Krishna. 257th verse. Mukti bhukti vancheyei kaha duharagati. Stavara deha deva deha yeche avastiti.
And what is the destination of those who desire liberation and those who desire sense gratification? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked. Ramanand Rai replied, those who attempt to merge into the existence of the Supreme Lord will have to accept bodies like those of trees. And those who are overly inclined towards sense gratification will attain the bodies of demigods.
So here there is an interesting answer. Ramanand Rai says that those who desire to merge into the impersonal Brahman, they will become trees. But the other answer is expected. Those who attach to enjoyment, they go to heavenly planets. So he explains that actually, one may say that, why will not they merge into the Brahman effulgence? So Prabhupada's answer is that, actually in one sense, either being situated, merging into the impersonal Brahman, or living as trees, there is no difference. Because the reason is that in the merging in the impulsive effulgence, you don't have any spiritual activities to perform. Similarly, when a person is living as trees, one does not have any one cannot perform any spiritual activities. So in that sense, he explains that it is the same whether one remains in the Brahman effulgence or in the material energy, because neither is there spiritual activity. And he also explains that
I think I read in Krishna book, I think somewhere, when Krishna is talking to Balram about how all the Vrindavan residents are offering respects to Balram. I think there is one statement like, these trees must have been impersonalists before, and now they have become trees here, and they are also something like that. My understanding was, if they didn't have a personal understanding, then they go to impersonal Brahma Jyoti. They had a personal understanding, but they didn't want to do service. Then they get Shantirati. In Shantirathi, they admire the Lord, but they don't render service. So the trees in Vrindavan, you know. But these trees, what he's talking about, they are Vrindavan trees, or?
No, it's not mentioned Vrindavan. Just the trees. Or it is... I don't know whether we have to take figuratively, but Prabhupada is explaining in a literally... One thing Prabhupada explains is that when people actually perform illicit activities in Vrindavan, they become actually hogs and dogs. So here there's an interesting, those who merge into the impersonal Brahman, they have to accept the bodies of trees. So he says, that on the other hand, they have no information about serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Consequently, they are doomed to stand like trees for many thousands of years. Although the trees are living entities, they are not moving. The liberated soul who merges into the existence of the Lord is no better than the trees. So one thing we can see is that when a person goes to the heavenly planets, going to the heavenly planets, according to this verse, it is superior to at least merging into the impersonal Brahman and becoming trees. Because when a person goes to the heavenly planet, there is at least some individual identity. So he can still, if he wants, he can engage in the service of the Lord. But when a person wants to merge into the impersonal Brahman and becomes a trees, there is neither can he perform spiritual activities, nor he can perform material activities. So that is the pathetic situation of the desire for mukti. They can neither perform material activity nor spiritual activity. Same thing.
They should have at least pursued for sense pleasure. By that, at least they would have retained their individuality.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada writes,
mm-hmm.
as in case of sense gratifiers, they are not merging and thereby they are retaining their individuality. So in that sense, they are inferior.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly they have sacrificed some, you know, higher pursuit, sense gratification for higher knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada gives Buddhist example.
Mm-hmm.
So how to understand? Will they advance in future life? As compared to sense gratifying.
If they come in contact with the association of a devotee. Suppose if they become trees and somebody offers the flower from there to Krishna. There is an intervention of a devotee and then one may advance.
We can tell them it's better to become a sense gratifier than what you are following.
Hmm.
Is it like that?
It's not that, in the sense, from one point of view, it is a valid point.
To become devotee.
The desire for mukti is a more dangerous desire than desire for bhukti. In the Rupa Goswami, also in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he just gives three or four quotations for desire for bhukti. But desire for mukti, how devotional service surpasses liberation. There is one entire chapter dedicated to Nectar of Devotion, which contains some 32 quotations. Whereas for desire for bhakti, he just gives only few quotations. So because there is absolutely no chance for, when a person gets liberation, there is no, although a person appears to be more renounced, but it is more detrimental when you see from the point of view of devotional service, there is no absolutely chance to render in bhakti. So, from that point of view, your point is valid, actually.
Actually, I just wanted to confirm, because I also read in Sharanagati Bhakti, Thakur writes, there are two people who are against Lord. One is sense gratifier and one is Mayavadi.
Mm.
So, he says, out of two, sense gratifier is okay, because by association of devotee, he can become a devotee.
Mm.
But for Mayavadi, although they sing Lord's name, But he says Dhiktara Krishna Seva Krishna Smaran. Because that acts as a, like a thunder word on the chest of Lord. So I never understood, because although they may be materially, at least they have detached, they have taken a step towards, although they are not aware where they will go, but they have certainly sacrificed some lower tendency which are there in sense gratifier. But they are unaware of it. They are thinking that as a ideal way, ideal path for, you know, coming closer to Krishna, whatever. But they are ultimately, like, for
example, they are worse. They are the worst. If you read the 6th chapter, 1st verse purport, Bhagavad Gita, so Prabhupada says that the desire to think, merge into Brahman is greater than any other material desire. The desire to merge into Brahman is greater than any other material desire. So, see, when you see that, even in that verse, akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradi. So, the first comes akama, then sarva kama, then moksha kama. So, Vishnu Chakotako writes in the purport that it seems there is a, akama means no desire. Sarva kama means a person is filled with all kinds of material desires. And moksha kama is the desire for liberation. So, it doesn't seem in the proper order. One may think that either it should be in ascending order or in a descending order. Like, zero sarva kama, that means like infinite number of desires, and moksha kama is one desire for liberation. So, if we see zero, infinity and one. So, if it is either it should be in ascending order, akama, moksha kama and then sarva kama. Or in a descending order, that means sarva kama, moksha kama, then akama. So why he has kept sarva kama before moksha kama? So he explains that actually, although moksha kama is just one desire for liberation, but this one desire for liberation is greater than having all kinds of material desires. Because in any desire, the ultimate, there are two actually impetus, to get happiness and to get rid of distress. In any material desire, if a person wants to go to heavenly planets or acquire something, the purpose is basically to get happiness and to get rid of the, to get rid of the relief from distress or something. So in the moksha kama, the desire for liberation, the desire to get happiness and to get relief from distress, this is there in the highest, in the highest degree. Although a person is detached from everything, he appears to be very renounced, but the desire to merge into Brahman, in that the intensity of just getting some selfish happiness and getting rid of the miseries, that intensity is there in the highest degree than in trying to get some other material objects or going to heavenly planets. So that is why the example which is given is that, Pratibimba and Chaya. Reflective semblance of faith and shadowy semblance of faith. Like suppose there is a tree at the bank of a river. The tree is there. So you can see the shadow of a tree. The shadow of a tree, when you see the shadow of a tree, you will not see, you will not be able to see the finer aspects of the features of the tree. You know that by seeing the shadow, there is a tree is there. But you can't see the finer aspects of what is the color of a leaf or what is the finer aspects of the details within that leaf or the branch, because everything looks black only in a shadow. But reflection of a tree, you may see the reflection of a tree in the, say, in the water. So in the reflection of a tree, you can see the finer aspects of the tree. Leaf is green in color, the branches are brown in color. You may see the more some three-dimensional aspects, etc. So reflection appears to be more attractive, reflection of a tree, because you are able to see the more features of the tree. But shadow appears to be, it does not contain, you are not able to see so many features of a tree, it doesn't appear to be so much attractive. But in the case of a shadow, it is connected to the tree. The shadow actually starts from the tree. But the reflection of the tree is actually disconnected from the tree. Are you getting this point? Reflection is actually seen in the river. Reflection is disconnected from the tree, but the shadow is connected to the tree. So similarly, just taking the example further, those who are having shadowy semblance of faith. Shadowy semblance of faith means like, they may practice bhakti, but they may not be very intense in their practice of bhakti. Sometimes they may chant the holy names, they may come to Krishna temples, but they have different material desires, they come for that purpose. So they don't appear to be very intense in the practice of bhakti. So externally you may find that these people are actually, they are not very serious devotees, they just come once in a while for some material purpose. On the other hand, there are those who are having reflective semblance of faith. They may appear to be very, like as you mentioned, certain Mayavadis or impersonalists, they may even be chanting the holy names of the Lord. They may be very austere. They may worship the deity forms of the Lord. Like one example is that Ramdas Viswas was always chanting the names of actually Lord Ram. So they may appear to be very attractive, but internally their desire is that, the desire is to actually merge into Brahman. They want to actually merge with God. So in that sense, because they have a very strong desire to merge with God, so they are like the reflective semblance of faith, they are actually disconnected from the tree. They are completely disconnected from the attitude of service to the Lord. But at least those who are having shadowy semblance of faith, they may not be intense in their practice of bhakti, but at least they don't have an offensive attitude of wanting to become God or merge into God. So therefore, even though they may appear to be less attractive, but at least they are actually, they don't have that intense offensive mentality. So, is it clear? Is it reflecting?
Prabhuji, basically, you want to say that it's a more selfish to merge
in that selfishness in the highest degree.
Than to desire selfishness for sense gratification. Actually, I heard example of Chaitanya Charan Prabhu. He also said, suicidal is the greatest selfishness. Although it apparently appears that he's selfish. Apparently he appears that it's selfless. But it's a greatest selfishness. So just like what you are saying, Mayavadi, although apparently appear they are selfless, but because they are also committing suicide.
They said Sankirtan Parihasyam Vasovanam Helanam. From that aspect, if you see that at least that whatever way we chant, the holy name will work. So if we connect it, it means just to raise the argument that how to clarify that at least the Mayavadis are chanting and following something. So won't that holy name would work?
No, the internal attitude is important. Because that, suppose if there is an offensive attitude to become one with God, then even though they are chanting, that chanting will not actually be effective. So they may get benefited, suppose when a pure devotee accepts their chanting. It's like when Prabhupada was in Chennai, I think some Mayavadis came to meet Prabhupada. So that he was telling Prabhupada that why in your Bhagavad Gita You have mentioned in this purport Krishna Bhakti Yoga, where there is no mention of, whereas the verse is talking about something else. So he was asking that. Prabhupada said, can you please tell me again? Can you read it again? And then he again repeated it. So again, it happened 2-3 times. Because Prabhupada actually wanted him to actually chant the holy names of Krishna. But main point, the way Brihat Bhagavat Maharaj explained is that, he said that when a pure devotee accepts the chanting of the Mayavadis, their chanting is offensive because they have inherent offensive attitude. But suppose if a pure devotee accepts that, then they actually get their credit. That's what he explained. So because they have the inherent offensive attitude, even though they are chanting, it will not actually purify them. That's what I remember reading in the Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani, Shivaram Maharaj quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
It is like Prabhupada said in regard to Sahajiyas, he said all the Sahajiyas are, they are with not proper attitude, but still if they get proper attitude and they understand it properly, they will progress first. Hmm. Then those who are materialists. So is it the same case with Mayavadis? If they get connected to devotees' blessing, they will progress faster, smoothly?
If they, especially in the case of say materialistic people, by connecting to the devotees, they can become devotees somewhat easily. But the Mayavadis, to make the Mayavadis as devotees, that is actually most difficult. Because there is an inherent seed of offensive attitude. So therefore, in order to completely change it, you have to completely uproot that and then you plant the new seed. So therefore, it is more difficult to actually do that. So yeah, there are instances, Mahaprabhu preaching to Prakashananda Saraswati and Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur also, there are stories of different this one. But usually it requires a very powerful Vaishnava. Any other points you want to share?
Harinam Chintamani, this Pratibimba Nama Bas, there Mayavadis are very vehemently attacked. Very, very strongly. He says that the sun which shines in the water, it is very condemned, very strongly condemned. Why? Because it gives people a feeling that there is sun, whereas there is no sun there. So in the same manner, the names chanted by Mayavadis is very, very strongly condemned because although they appear like devotees, they are like a tiger who is covered with a cow skin and coming to drink water. And you may be thinking cow, you know, and then they will throw away the skin and pounce upon you. That is why they are very vehemently condemned. Because their intention of chanting the holy name is to become one with God. Mm-hmm. So it is not only not appreciated, it is condemned. Mm-hmm. So in one purport, I remember reading clearly, Prabhupada saying that Sahajiyas are superior to Mayavadis.
Yes, yes.
I read somewhere. So Prabhupada says that Sahajiyas are unable to do devotion service properly, but they can be rectified. But Mayavadi cannot be rectified because he doesn't want to do devotion service. He wants to usurp the position of the Lord.
So the Mayavadis are hopelessly atheistic. At least Sahajiyas are better than that, like that he explains.
Go ahead.
So, in the case of sense gratifiers, they at least retain their individuality in order to enjoy life. But the impersonalists who try to lose their individuality lose both material and spiritual pleasure. The last destination of the Buddhist philosophers is to become just like a stone, which is immovable and has neither material nor spiritual activity. So then Prabhupada quotes one verse from the Uddhava Gita. So this first paragraph talks mainly about a comparison between the desire for bhukti and desire for mukti. And he talks mainly about the desire for mukti. And then the second paragraph, he gives two quotations. One quotation from Uddhava Gita, another from Bhagavad Gita, which talk about how when people go to heavenly planets, after enjoying the results of their pious activities, they again come back. Shine Punye, Martya Lokam Vishanti. They again come back and take birth in this planet in the form of the through rain. They again begin their life as grass and plants in the evolutionary process. 258th verse. It's a very beautiful verse. Arasagya kake chushe jnana nimba phale. Rasagya kokilakaya premamra mukule.
Ramanandraya continued, those who are devoid of all transcendental mellows are like the crows that stuck the juice from the bitter fruits of the nimba tree of knowledge, whereas those who enjoy mellows are like the cuckoos who eat the birds of the mango trees of love of Godhead.
It's a beautiful analogy. Arasagya and rasagya. So Bhagavatam also it comes, rasagya. First chapter itself it comes that what is that verse? Vayam tuna vitrupyama uttama shloka vikrame yashinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. So those who are knowers of rasa, they actually relish the Krishna katha as newer and newer at every step. So that one of the last week we were discussing about the Achyuta. Achyuta has three meanings in the Gita. One who never fails in his affection for his devotees, one who never fails to forgive his devotees, one who never fails to protect the vows of his devotees. But another meaning of the word Achyuta, which comes in the Brahma Vimohan Leela, that when Shukadeva Goswami is glorifying Parishit Maharaj, so there also, Striyo Vitanam Iva Sadhu Varta, that verse comes. Satamayam Sarabhrutam Nisargo Yadartha Vani Shruti Chetasam Api Pratikshanam Navyavad Achyutasya. So there the word Achyutasya comes. So there the word Achyuta means, so Shrudeva Goswami is saying that you are actually, because you are so advanced, you are relishing Krishna Katha as newer and newer at every step. So there the word Achyuta means one who never deviates from rasa. So Krishna's, one of the meaning of the word Achyuta, one who never deviates from rasa. So because he never deviates from rasa, so Krishna Katha appears newer and newer to a devotee. So rasagya, so those who are knowers of rasa, those who can actually relish rasa, they are like the cuckoo birds who relish the tree of the sweet buds of the mango tree of love of God. And those who are not knowers of rasa, they actually suck the bitter fruits of the nimba tree of knowledge. So Ramanandarai said, the unfortunate empiric philosophers taste the dry process of philosophical knowledge, whereas the devotees regularly drink the nectar of love of Krishna. Therefore, they are the most fortunate of all. So, in this way, they discussed Krishna Katha for the whole night. And then the night ended. When the morning came, then Ramanandarai returned. He went back to his home, and again in the evening Ramanandarai came to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when he comes to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramanandarai held Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet and then he started speaking. 263rd verse. Krishna Tattva Radha Tattva Prema Tattva Sara Rasa Tattva Leela Tattva Vivida Prakara.
There is a variety of transcendental truths. The truth about Krishna, the truth about Radharani, the truth about their loving affairs, the truth about transcendental humor, and the truth about the Lord's pastimes.
So now Ramanandarai, he is actually giving credit to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for whatever he had spoken. He said, there are so many varieties of truths, Krishna Tattva, Radha Tattva, Prema Tattva. Actually, you have manifested these truths from me, just like Lord Narayan educated Lord Brahma. So So he is giving the full credit to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Shvetasvatara Upanishad, which actually tells that how Lord Narayan actually enlightened Lord Brahma in the Vedic knowledge. Because I desire liberation, let me surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who first enlightened Lord Brahma in Vedic knowledge through Lord Brahma's heart. The Lord is the original source of all enlightenment and spiritual advancement. And Prabhupada gives other quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam. 265th verse. Antaryami Ishwarera Yairiti Haye Bahire Nakahe Vastu Prakashe Hridaye.
Ramanandrai continued. The super soul within everyone's heart speak not externally, but from within. He instructs the devotees in all respect, and that is his way of instruction.
So basically, Ramananda Rai is actually admitting, or he is saying that, you are the super soul within my heart. You are the Krishna, you are situated as a super soul in my heart. As a super soul, you made me speak these things. And then, so Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Shukdev Goswami's prayers, the second canto, fourth chapter, where Shukdev Goswami is praying in order to invoke the blessing of the Lord. He says that just like you actually spoke to Lord Brahma, you inspired, you amplified the, just like the, may the Lord who in the beginning of the creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him to actually, inspired him with the full knowledge of creation. So similarly, may you be pleased with me. That means like, may you also inspire me with the right words so that I can speak to Srimad Parishad Maharaj. And Ramanandara himself is quoting the first verse of the Bhagavatam because that verse contains Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. So now, after giving credit to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Rai, now he is going to present one doubt. In the next 267 to 271, in these five verses, Ramananda Rai tells that what he is seeing, and then he asks a doubt to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. 268th verse. Pahile dekilu tomara sanyasi swarupa. Ebe toma deki muni shyama goparupa.
Ramanandraya then told Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at first I saw you appear like a sanyasi, but now I am seeing you as Shyam Sundar, the cowherd boy.
So here he says that actually, earlier I saw a sannyasi, now I'm seeing you as a cowherd boy. And now I see you appearing like a golden doll and your entire body appears covered by a golden luster. And I'm seeing that you are holding a flute in your mouth and your eyes are moving restlessly due to various ecstasies. So please tell me, like, what is the cause of this particular vision? And please tell me without duplicity. Akapate kaha prabhu karana ihara. So Mahaprabhu replies. So very beautiful reply of Mahaprabhu. Prabhu kahe krishne tomara guda prema hai. Premara swabhava ye janiha nishchaye.
Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, you have a deep love for Krishna, and one who has such deep ecstatic love for the Lord naturally sees things in such a way. Please take this from me to be certain.
Mahabhagavata deke stavara jangama taha taha hayatandra Sri Krishna sphurana.
A devotee advanced on the spiritual platform sees everything movable and inert as the Supreme Lord. For him, everything he sees here and there is but a manifestation of Lord Krishna.
So now he speaks the very famous verse. So basically, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what he is saying is that he says that actually you are seeing like this because you are the maha, you are a Mahabhagavat Vaishnava. Mahabhagavat Vaishnava, whatever he sees everything in relation to Krishna. So because of your advanced Krishna consciousness, you are seeing me like this vision. So Mahaprabhu is not admitting actually. So he is actually glorifying Ramananda Rai is because of your advanced vision. So this is the 274th verse of the very famous verse. Stavara jangama deke na deke tara murti. Sarvatra haya nija ishta deva sfurti.
The Mahabhagavata, the advanced devotee certainly sees everything movable and immovable, but he does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord.
So, when a Mahabhagavat sees any particular form, tree or plant, etc., he actually sees them in relation to how they are the energies of Krishna. It is not that those forms become transformed into Krishna. It is when it is mentioned that everywhere he sees Krishna, it is not that when he sees a tree, the tree becomes transformed into Krishna. He sees the tree as an energy of Krishna. So that is what, like in the Bhagavatam, when he describes the Mahabhagavat, which is the next verse, Sarva Bhuteshu Yaha Pashyet, Bhagavat Bhavam Atmana, Bhutani Bhagavat Yatman, Yesha Bhagavat Uttama. The Uttama Adhikari or Uttama Bhakta, he sees everything in relation to Krishna. So we have to understand that in that purport also it's explained. It means that a person sees everything as an energy of Krishna. Just like Prabhupada gives an analogy, when the sun rises, automatically all the activities stop. A person starts different activities. As soon as we see the sunrise in the morning, we arise and set about doing our morning duties. So similarly, when a Mahabhagavata sees something, he immediately sees that as an energy of Krishna and then he starts remembering Krishna. So, and for that he gives a different quotation because the Mahabhagavata, he has this vision because he is actually having the love for the Lord, Premanjana Churita. And even when he is drinking water, Rasoham Apsu Kaunte, he sees that as the taste is coming from Krishna. So that is what in the purport is explained. And then 276th verse, Mahaprabhu is giving an example of devotees who had this vision. That is the gopis. This is the verse from the Jugala Geet. Actually, the verses from Venu Geet or Jugal Geet, all these are actually examples when the gopis see the different things in Vrindavan. They see that how these living entities are actually having so much of love for Krishna. They, because of their love for Krishna, they see trees having so much of love for the Lord. The deers are having like that. These are all examples of Mahabhagavat. 276th verse, the gopis are saying that the plants, creepers and trees were full of fruits and flowers due to ecstatic love of Krishna. Indeed, being so full, they were bowing down. They were inspired by such deep love for Krishna that they were constantly pouring showers of honey. In this way, the gopis saw all the forests of Vrindavan. So, of course, Prabhupada quotes that Prapanchi Kadaya Buddhya Hari Sambandhi Vastuna. Mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam falgu katyate. Like those who actually reject something without seeing the connection to Krishna, they are practicing falgu vairagya. On the other hand, a devotee practices yukta vairagya. So if you remember one point we had discussed when we are discussing this three types of devotees in the 11th canto. Pradhyana Maharaj explains in the purport, although a Mahabhagavat sees everyone as a devotee of Krishna, he remembers Krishna by seeing how that particular living entity or an object is an energy of Krishna. But still, when a Mahabhagavat comes in the association of other devotees, he exhibits much greater pleasure. You remember this point? So Mahabhagavat, whatever he sees everything as an energy of Krishna, and he sees everything in connection with Krishna. But still, when he particularly comes in contact with another devotee, he exhibits much greater pleasure. And for that, what example is given? Does anybody remember? Lord Shiva Prachetas. Lord Shiva is definitely a Mahabhagavat. But still, when the Prachetas came to meet Lord Shiva, when the Prachetas came, you remember those verses, 4th canto, 24th chapter. Lord Shiva is especially expressing his pleasure. So you are actually, because you have a desire to worship Krishna, and I am very much pleased with you. So Lord Shiva is a Mahabhagavat, he sees everything in connection to Krishna, but still, when he came in the association of, when he got the association of other devotees, who are, like Prabhupada explained, the Prachetas only, they have not even begun worshipping the Lord. They only desire to worship the Lord. But Lord Shiva has become so much pleased. And he speaks the Rudra Gita. So therefore, Mahabhagavat, so this point is explained there. So I think we will take a break. We will continue after the break. From the 11th.